Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
And a good afternoon to you. Thank you. Good to be back for another hour. As we said last week, it was most people believed that both Sweden and Finland would be applying for NATO membership. They've basically been thrown into the arms of NATO by Vladimir Putin's invasion of Ukraine. And Finland has, I think, 800 or so miles of common border with Russia. So, you know, obviously there's concern there. Previously, Sweden and Finland had been non-aligned. The good news is that they both have very strong democracies and very strong militaries. So they're good candidates to join NATO. There is some question, though. You have to have, as I understand it, unanimous agreement on the part of NATO members. There's 30 nations there. And right now, Turkey is getting a lot of attention because President Erdogan has suggested that he might block Finland's NATO application. We're going to talk with Elizabeth Brau about it. Elizabeth is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, where she focuses on defense against emerging national security challenges. She's also a columnist with Foreign Policy, where she focuses on national security and the globalized economy. She also serves as a member of the National Preparedness Committee. So she'll be joining us. We're also going to be joined by Father Robert Sirico of the Acton Institute, looking at Jesus and the parables and the economy. Well, what do we learn from the parables of Jesus? As I said at the beginning of the first hour of the program, the parables are really great looks at common everyday experiences. They involve oftentimes matters of what we would call business or economics or investment, inheritance disputes. And so we're going to go over the parables of Jesus and try to tease out from them the economic implications. Again, I like to point out that the parables are generally regarded as a signature mark of Jesus. Ancient historians, when they are trying to get a grip on ancient characters, they're always looking for what's distinctive about this person or that person. Parables, very distinctive part of who Jesus is. But right now, let's get to the headlines.
Thanks, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, May 16th. It's the Feast of St. Simon Stock. Today's news is brought to you by Charity Mobile, supporting pro-life and Catholic causes at CharityMobile.com. Ukraine's Deputy Prime Minister says Finland and Sweden's moves to apply for NATO membership point to a promising future.
NATO has learned on the mistakes and the political mistakes which has been done back in 2008. By making promises without delivering.
Appearing on ABC's This Week, Ukrainian Deputy Prime Minister Olga Stefanishina's comment was in reference to Ukraine's still pending application to the alliance that was first submitted back in 2008. The Deputy Prime Minister went on to say that she hopes that the fast-tracking of Finland and Sweden's applications will pave the way for Ukraine's acceptance in the future. More on this story later this hour of today's program. A suspect has been charged with burglary in connection with the theft of a tabernacle from a parish church in Greater Houston. The suspect has been identified as Christian Merritt and no motive has been established. The investigation is ongoing. JetBlue is launching a new effort to take over Spirit Airlines, and this time it's a hostile takeover attempt. According to the Wall Street Journal, JetBlue will offer $30 cash per share on Spirit stock. Rival Frontier has its own buyout bid for Spirit outstanding, with a vote on the offer slated for next month. And authorities discover what they're calling a fully operational drug tunnel under the border.
The tunnel was discovered by police and members of the Mexican National Guard at a home in Tijuana Saturday night, and the exit point is in a warehouse on the U.S. side in Otay Mesa. Authorities in Tijuana say the tunnel was used to smuggle drugs and for other illicit activity. The Border Patrol has sealed up the tunnel on the U.S. side and is investigating the incident. This is the 90th cross-border tunnel found in San Diego County since 2009. I'm Eddie McCoven.
I'm Steve Clark. Ave Maria, Radio News.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. Well, beginning last Thursday, we've seen Finland and then Sweden both officially announce that they will appeal to NATO to become members. This is really a striking rebuke to Vladimir Putin for his invasion of Ukraine. With me right now to talk about this application for NATO membership and how it may go, we've got Elizabeth Brow with us, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, where she focuses on defenses against emerging national security challenges. She's also a columnist with Foreign Policy and also is a member of the National Preparedness Commission. Elizabeth, good to have you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's, you know, this was being reported that Finland and Sweden may be interested in joining NATO. And so let me ask, first of all, why weren't they already members of NATO? They got, you know, strong democracies. They have strong military. It seemed to me they would have been good candidates.
They are exceptional candidates. During the Cold War, Finland wasn't able to join NATO, even if they had to sign a friendship treaty with the Soviets after the end of World War II, and Sweden had the policy that it wanted to remain non-aligned because it saw itself as somehow special in the world. They had a special role as a potential mediator in conflicts and so forth. It was very much an ideological position.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that didn't prevent Sweden from secretly working with NATO and NATO member states, but nevertheless, that was its position. Since the end of the Cold War, both have been able to join, both Sweden and Finland have been able to join NATO, but they decided together to remain outside Sweden for the same ideological reasons, and Finland really because it didn't see an overwhelming threat against it. But it always retained a NATO option, and that's what it has invoked now in saying the situation has really deteriorated quite significantly, so we are going to invoke this NATO option,
yeah.
And in doing so, it essentially forced Sweden to come along.
Yeah, I mean, there's something just wickedly ironic about this, that Putin was concerned about Ukraine joining the European Union or becoming a member of NATO, so one of the reasons he invades. And what he ends up doing is driving Finland and Sweden into the arms of NATO. Is that as crazy as it sounds? Is he beating his head against the wall?
It is as crazy as it sounds. It's really the ultimate irony of this conflict, if we can allow ourselves to talk about irony in a conflict that involves extreme tragedy for the Ukrainians.
But yes,
it really
Thank
is
you.
An irony, especially with regards to Finland, which has been, despite having been put under considerable Soviet pressure during the Cold War, Finland has really been very committed to dialogue with Russia, and has taken pride in keeping that dialogue going,
mm-hmm.
despite, of course, having very very extensive defense capabilities and having really the whole country involved in its national defense. Even so, it has taken pride and invested a lot of effort in having this dialogue. And it's believed until the very last moment that it would be able to get Putin to change his mind. But when that didn't work,
mm-hmm.
clearly the Finnish government and especially the Finnish public decided that this strategy is over. And as a result, became very strongly in favor of NATO membership. What an ultimate irony.
Yeah. I saw earlier numbers said before the invasion of Ukraine, public opinion was only 30% thought NATO membership was in their future. And then after the invasion, the numbers bumped up to 80%, which is really a change of public opinion over there.
It is remarkable, an extraordinary development. Yes, as you say, public the support for NATO among the Finnish public used to be in the low 20s, sometimes a little bit lower, sometimes a bit higher, but always in that range.
Yeah.
And as of today, it is, 76% was the most recent survey, and of the members of parliament who have said how they are going to vote, which is everybody, it was 185 in favor and 15 against.
Wow.
Really an extraordinary development.
Yeah. Well, let's talk then about whether President Erdogan of Turkey might be the spoiler here. Is it true that membership in NATO, to be received into NATO, one has to have unanimous agreement of all member nations?
Yes. So the way succession works is you apply, and then the headquarters deals with the administrative aspects, then the application goes to the NATO member states, specifically to their parliament. So it doesn't matter whether their governments have agreed, their parliaments have to ratify this accession. And so that's where there is usually a bit of delay, not just a bit, can be quite long delays. And now, because every country has to agree and also ratify every new member state, President Erdogan of Turkey, who is not a man to miss an opportunity for a bit of horse trading, has clearly spotted an opportunity and clearly sees this as a chance to get something out of Sweden, Finland, or NATO, and or the United States, and or another NATO member state before, as so to speak, the prize for Turkey agreeing to Sweden and Finland joining NATO. So he is a skilled tactician, and that's what he's doing again.
Okay. Is he concerned? He alleges that Sweden and Finland were home to many terrorist organizations, principally the Militant Kurdistan Workers' Party, or PKK. Most of us don't know what that is. So tell us what he's talking about.
Yeah, so Sweden has a long history of taking in a lot of asylum seekers, and especially during the Cold War, the latter part of the Cold War, they did take in a number of Kurds as asylum seekers. And you remember that there was even a trail in the investigation into who killed Olof Palme, that the Prime Minister of Palme, who was killed in 1986. That trail allegedly led to Kurdish assassins, but it turned out not to be the case that they were behind it. So Sweden has taken in a number of Kurds over the years, but I think this is a sort of a red herring. He's using it as an excuse to really get concessions out of NATO, out of NATO member states and NATO itself, as the prize for agreeing to Sweden and Finland joining NATO.
Okay.
There is a twist, though, which is that the Swedish government is very weak and relies on one independent member of parliament for its survival, and she feels very strongly about supporting the Kurds. So she's now saying to the Swedish government that it's giving in to Turkey. So there is a real fight there between the Swedish government and this one member of parliament who is threatening to withdraw her support. But nevertheless, as far as Kurds' influence in Sweden goes, I think that is simply an excuse for President Erdogan to get a little bit of something, for example, F-35s out of this accession process.
Okay. Does that help him in domestic politics there in Turkey?
Well, I don't think any voter would reject anything that a leader can get out of an international negotiation. Of course, in most liberal democracies, we wouldn't do horse trading like that. We wouldn't say, well, we are not going to agree to something that's plainly obvious that we should agree to simply because we want to get something out of it. U.S. leaders, European leaders wouldn't normally do such a thing, but he is his own show. He is very different from other leaders, President Erdogan. So he may score some political points at home, especially if he manages to turn this into a situation where the U.S. agrees to sell him F-35.
Okay. Let me go back then to Putin, if you don't mind. I just can't imagine how he. How does this play in his mind? He was upset with Ukraine, as I understand it, because Ukraine's threat of joining NATO meant that NATO would be on his doorstep. Ukraine would no longer be kind of his buffer against the West. Now all of a sudden he's got 900 miles of border with Finland, and now Finland's going to be a member of NATO, so he's got NATO on his border again.
He does, and it is really the ultimate irony of this war. But we have to remember that Finland is not Ukraine. President
right.
Putin has some sort of hang-up regarding Ukraine. He thinks he sees it as Russia. He considers it Russia, and so no sort of logical reasoning, or what we would consider logical reasoning, could convince him. That it was a bad idea to invade Ukraine. He clearly doesn't see Finland as part of Russia, and it's not part of Russia. It used to belong to Russia. In fact, Russia captured it from Sweden in a war 200 years ago, but he clearly doesn't consider Finland part of Russia, whereas he does consider Ukraine part of Russia. And so losing Ukraine to the Western community, such as NATO, was clearly something that he felt offended him and Russia, which is why he wanted to prevent it. At least that's what he said. Nevertheless, losing Finland to NATO is clearly painful. We should remember that Finland and Sweden have a very long history, well, since the end of the Cold War, of cooperating with NATO, and in the case of Sweden, even before the end of the Cold War, cooperating with NATO, and in recent years, cooperating extremely closely, integrating extremely closely, and that's something that President Putin knows. He didn't think of them as neutral countries, because they were not.
Is Putin going to simply satisfy him? He's going to finish off building that land bridge to Crimea. He's going to have that southeastern area covered and basically declare victory rather than continue to, you know, try to take over Ukraine in toto.
That seems to be the plan. He has to be able to show some sort of victory quite soon.
Right.
And if he can show that Russia has conquered and kept that strip of land, going down from south of Kharkiv, all the way down to the sea, then he will be able, then along to Crimea, then he will be able to show some sort of, demonstrate some sort of victory to
right.
the Russian public, and a victory that makes sense, because then it looks like, not just looks like, then Crimea is connected
right.
to Russia proper.
Yeah.
So,
Elizabeth, thank you so much. Wonderful talking with you.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 15 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
This program underwritten by...
A battle is raging in America for the plight of the unborn. Now is the time to pray and to get involved. Do not miss the new award-winning movie, The Matter of Life. The Matter of Life has been hailed as the best film ever produced concerning the unborn and can be seen for two nights only in a theater near you. Visit FathomEvents.com now to reserve your tickets for May 16th or May 17th. That's FathomEvents.com. FathomEvents.com. It's a matter of life.
Underwritten in part by the following nonprofit.
Paying too much for healthcare and supporting services you don't believe in? Our sponsor, Solidarity Healthshare, has prices that are 60% less than the nation's average cost of healthcare. Join the nation's leading healthcare sharing ministry, built by people of faith for people of faith, saving money through ethical and affordable healthcare. Call now to see how much you can save. 866-977-5821. That's 866-977-5821.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically own shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
I grew up with the Ten Commandments hanging on the wall next to my front door. I looked at them occasionally, mostly when I passed by and through the front door, but every once in a while, I would stop and stand in front of them and read them. My dad one time saw me reading them, and he asked, "Do you know why I put those Ten Commandments hanging near the door?" "No," I replied. He said, "It's so you and your sisters are reminded how to behave when you walk out that door." Seeds of faith were being planted in my heart. Today, I have the Ten Commandments in my foyer, hanging next to my front door, a reminder not only to the kids who come into my home, but for everyone else, including myself, how to behave when we walk out that door. You never know what seeds could be planted in another just by the Ten Commandments being in clear view. Anyone who walks in and out will be reminded that our house is a house of God, and we strive to communicate the commandments with how we live our lives. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, a communications evangelist and host of Epiphany.
Support for this Ave Maria program comes in part by the not-for-profit St. Anthony Services. Shopping for insurance, mortgage products, Catholic health coverage, identity protection, or financial planning? StAnthonyServices.org can help you find a Catholic professional for all those and more. They regularly connect faithful citizens with faith-based professionals that share our Christian values. StAnthonyServices.org or 877-LIFE-US-1.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 75% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US-1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Good afternoon, I'm Al Cresta. The parables of Jesus are really, in a sense, his signature. That is a mark of his personality, a mark of his teaching style. It's clearly what even non-believing people know about Jesus, that he spoke in parables, and they're so memorable. We've got, of course, the parable of the prodigal son, probably the most popular parable out there. And it's interesting to point out that the parable of the prodigal son begins as an inheritance dispute. And in fact, that comes up later in the parable, too. Not only does the prodigal want his share of the inheritance prematurely, but when he comes back, the older brother is ticked off at his good treatment from his father. But notice, you do have an economic dimension to that. You've also got the parable of the rich fool, you know, who actually that also begins with an inheritance dispute at the beginning of it. But he's the one who can builds up his big barns and fills them and says, soul, you've done well for yourself, you know. Eat, drink, and be merry. And then God says, well, tonight I'm going to take your life. So there you have again a parable with a certain angle on proper stewardship of one's resources. You can take a look at the parable of the talents. You know, I gave you this much to invest, and you put it in the ground because you were afraid to invest it. And what happens? Well, pretty negative outcome there, because the fellow wouldn't, you might say, take the risk of entrepreneurship, if you want to put it that way. I'm not trying to say that you can go to the parables of Jesus and come up with a systematic view of the economy. That's not what I'm saying at all. But we often neglect to note how rich in meaning the parables are. Another thing about the parables, too, is they have wide appeal. Very young people can enjoy them. Old scholars can enjoy them. And they, again, show a mark of genius, just, again, from the human level alone. Even if you don't believe that Christ is the Son of God, you certainly come away saying, this man was one heck of a good teacher. And, you know, for that reason alone, deserves a place in, you might say, the canon of great human teachers. We know he's much more than that, but he is at least that in the eyes of even the unbelieving world. We're going to take time with Father Robert Sirico today. Father Robert is a Catholic priest and co-founder and president emeritus of the Acton Institute for the Study of Religion and Liberty. I should mention, too, we're going to be there in Grand Rapids at Acton University coming up June 20th to 23rd. We're having a little technical difficulty getting a hold of Father Robert right now, but as soon as he joins us, we'll go into the book that he just recently released called The Economics of the Parables. And the book itself takes a look at some of the most compelling parables. That's another thing that comes up in studies of the parables. How many are there? We can remember maybe a dozen of them pretty quickly, but oftentimes some of these parabolic stories are not much more than one or two sentences. And there have actually been some scholars who claim if you look at the synoptics in John and you compare them all and pile them up on top, you get up to 200 parables. I don't know how they do it, but it's been said. I'd like to see sometime how they do it. It seems counterintuitive to me that there are that many there. But there are enough for us to benefit from. There's something else I should mention, too, that might be worth noting, and that is that New Testament studies over the last generation, actually it's been a few generations now, once it was determined how central the parables were to Jesus' teaching style, New Testament scholarship really went all out. And there are some just great academic studies of the parables that you can find today. Well, joining me right now is Father Robert Sirico. He is author most recently of The Economics of Parables. He's president emeritus and co-founder of the Acton Institute and pastor emeritus of Sacred Heart of Jesus Parish in Grand Rapids, Michigan. His writings on religious, political, economic, and social matters are published in a wide variety of journals, including the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, London Financial Times, Detroit News, National Review, Washington Times. And you can follow him on Twitter at Robert Sirico, S-I-R-I-C-O. And you can, of course, visit acton.org. Father, good to have you back. Thanks.
Great to be back with you, Al. Thank you.
Well, talk to me about the origins of the book, The Economics of the Parables. I'm sure, just from knowing you, that you're not trying to come up with macroeconomic analysis of Jesus here.
Certainly not. And thank you for saying that right off the bat, because I predict this. This is a word of prophecy now. When I will be critiqued about this book, they will say that I'm trying to eisegete the parables, you know, insert economics. Absolutely not doing that. I say it several times in the book, but I will be accused of it nonetheless.
Okay.
Because for the simple reason that economics as an academic discipline, a social discipline, didn't come into existence until, you could start with the scholastics and then Adam Smith.
Right, right.
So it would be anomalous to say that Jesus was teaching economics. He's teaching the kingdom of God, but he's using certain economic presuppositions
mm-hmm.
in the parables. And that's what I'm saying.
And those economic presuppositions are really part of common human experience.
That's the whole thing. It's human action.
Yeah.
How do we allocate resources?
Yeah. You point out in the parable of the rich fool. Let me just pull it up here, to make sure I can read enough of it so people recall.
I will do that too, because all these parables.
Yeah. So the parable starts like this, and again, often called the parable of the rich fool. And one of the company said unto him, Master, speak to my brother, that he divide the inheritance with me. And he said unto him, Man, who made me a judge or a divider over you? And he said unto them, Take heed, and beware of covetousness, for a man's life consisteth not in the abundance of the things which he possesseth. And he spoke a parable unto them, saying, The ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, What shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruits. And he said, This will I do. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. And I will say to my soul, Soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. But God said unto him, Thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall these things be which thou hast provided? So is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. Again, from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12, verses 13 to 22, or 21, excuse me. This clearly deals with possessions. It deals with stewardship of one's resources.
It also deals with inheritance, because that's the thing that prompts the whole...
That's right, at the very beginning, yeah.
Yeah.
You've got an inheritance dispute.
I should say at the outset, by the way, your reading of it reminded me, I chose to use the King James Bible for the text, which is relatively unusual today because, you know, it's antiquated language, but the drama of that language, it's a kind of Shakespearean language, and it's a very biblical language. Because, I mean, even your reading of it, it gives it a certain sense of majesty.
Yes,
for study purposes, you know, maybe not the King James Version, but right. I think for this, it provides a lovely, dramatic part. But yes, you're right. I mean, the Lord is really pointing to the fact that wealth can obscure the most important things in our lives. It does it for this young man who comes and asks Jesus to adjudicate this inheritance problem. In under Jewish law, the eldest son received twice the inheritance of a younger male sibling. Now, part of that was because he'd have responsibility for taking care of the estate of the family and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that was part of this whole thing. But then the blindness on the part of the rich man himself, who's accumulating everything, and then he comes to see. And in fact, I think this is where the phrase comes from, you can't take it with you.
right. Yeah.
There's so many of these things, these little sayings we have that come from the Bible and from the parables in particular. The word talents, for example, comes from the parable of the talents.
Yeah.
And this, you can't take it with you. It's interesting that I think it's Ambrose, I cited in the chapter somewhere, says, but what you can take with you are virtues.
Yeah.
That you can take with you.
Very good. Very good.
So to use your wealth, your material wealth, for the purpose of virtue is really storing up things in heaven.
Yeah. Let me go to another one here, and that is the see how you find it. This is one I can remember many, many years ago when I was starting out managing a chain of retail bookstores. I was a fairly young Christian, and I was trying to think biblically about, being a retail manager and what to do. And one of the things I read that had me absolutely baffled about its economic consequences was the parable of the laborers in the vineyard.
I knew you were going there.
And that's the one where it starts out. Jesus says, "The kingdom of heaven is like unto a man that is a householder, which went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And he agrees to pay them." So he hires those earlier in the day. He goes out and hires a little bit later in the day. And then he hires people at the end of the day. And he gives them all, well, the same award that he had agreed to. Got to take a break, Father. We'll come back and continue the conversation looking at the laborers in the vineyard. My guest, Father Robert Sirico, the economics of the parables. I'm Al Cresta.
Another year has come and gone, and whether you like it or not, Uncle Sam requires you to make an accounting.
Perhaps it's time to call Myler and Zipka. They work with you to legally minimize your tax bill and identify ways to reduce future taxes. Eliminate the nagging feeling that you're paying more taxes than you need to. Call Ken Zipka today at 734-930-5500. Myler and Zipka. Integrity, excellent value, and people dedicated to a long-term relationship. 734-930-5500.
Looking for peace? Longing for joy? God is calling you to know and love Jesus Christ like never before and to help others do the same. God is calling you to bring Ignatian prayer into the suffering world, to work for the new evangelization. Here's your opportunity. Go to LordTeachMeToPray.com, order the free digital training and facilitator manual. LordTeachMeToPray.com. Click on the red button now. God is calling you. Underwritten by Lord Teach Me to Pray.
Brought to you by the nonprofit Seton Home Study.
Hi, everybody. Dr. Ray Guarendi here. My wife and I have used Seton Home curriculum for our homeschooling. One of the great things about it, you learn about your faith, not just in religion, but history and English and science and reading. Their curriculum uses saints as role models. I don't think they've used me yet. Children are prepared to rationally explain and defend their faith. It permeates the instruction. You want to give your kids not only a top-notch education, but an understanding of their faith as it permeates the subjects that matter in their lives. I don't know if there's too much better than Seton homeschooling. We used it a lot. You are the best teacher for all of that. Let Seton get right beside you and give you the material you need. Go to SetonHome.org. SetonHome.org.
Last week on Ave Maria Radio's Poll of the Week, we wanted to know how your state is responding to the potential overturn of Roe v. Wade. About 57% of you said that your state is passing laws that will expand access to abortion, 28% said they are passing laws that will make your state more pro-life, and about 15% said your state hasn't done anything yet. Thanks to everybody who voted in our Poll of the Week, and if you want to vote in a new poll, go to AveMariaRadio.net.
Hello, Steve Ray here with a pilgrimage update. In July, join our Shrines of Wisconsin Pilgrimage and Love Being Catholic Conference with Mass celebrated by Cardinal Burke at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. The conference speakers will include myself, along with Father Donald Calloway and Father Chris Allar, and a surprise guest you'll absolutely love.
To learn more about your Ave Maria Radio trip, find the Ave Maria Radio Travel tab at AveMariaRadio.net.
This program is brought to you by the following nonprofit underwriter.
As Catholics, we are called to protect life at every stage, but our culture continues to impose threats against the sanctity of life, making the pro-life cause the preeminent social issue of our time. But there is hope. The Christ Medicus Foundation and CMF Puro have partnered with one of the country's leading health care ministries to provide Catholics with a pathway to pro-life, Christ-centered health care. Support the culture of life and learn more about CMF Puro at MyCatholicHealthCare.com. That's MyCatholicHealthCare.com.
Nestled under the warm Florida sun is a university whose name indicates a vocational call. Ave Maria, Latin for Hail Mary, recalls the angel Gabriel's announcement to Mary of her future vocation, becoming the Mother of God. Enriched by God's grace, Mary freely ascends to this call. This is the model for all students. Come to Ave Maria University, where you'll be empowered to clearly see your vocational call, whatever that call might be. Ave Maria University, your vocation location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Presto. With me, Father Robert Sirico of the Acton Institute. His book, The Economics of the Parables, have us looking at these remarkable teaching moments of Jesus with new eyes. We were talking just before the break about the laborers in the vineyard, and this is the parable in which Jesus, the landowner, goes and hires workers early in the day, promises to pay them something. Later, he notices that the job isn't being done as quickly as he had hoped. He needs more workers. He goes out, gathers some others. Later, the day goes on. He still needs more workers, and he brings them in towards the end of the day. The big surprise is they'll get paid the same, and those who had worked the whole day are, unhappy. And so they go to the landowner, and thus follows the moral of the story. So, Father, talk to us about the economics behind this laborers in the vineyard parable.
Well, I think one of the first things to keep in mind is that there was a great risk to this landowner because he saw his crop potentially being going to waste.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have had consequences for himself as well as for all of those who depended on its product. So that's the first thing. And it really is a lesson ripped from the headlines of today's newspapers, right, about the shortage of labor.
Yeah.
He couldn't find enough people. And so he goes out and he gets them. Now, what's important at the end, and this, a lot of people reading this say that they really don't like the owner of the vineyard. He somehow has treated people wrongly. But what's important to keep in mind here is that the perception of injustice is only in the mind. It's a very subjective evaluation. Because if the parable had gone where he pays everyone, the first laborers, the amount he agreed to, and then gave a half amount or a quarter amount to all the others, the first ones would have gone home happy. So they weren't angry about the wage they got.
Right.
They were angry about the generosity that was being shown to somebody else.
Wow. So
and that's a very key point. And as to the moral lesson of it, the owner of the vineyard himself says at the end, look, did you not agree? Didn't we agree on this wage? Yes. And are you, isn't this my property? Can I do what I want with my property? Are you envious because I am generous?
Right.
That's
right.
Really the lesson. And the lesson of this, of course, is the lesson of the good thief on the cross, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
God's generosity.
Yes.
And, you know, we have Christians today, I mean, in our parishes who kind of resent these, you know, people coming in and, you know, they haven't been in the parish. Their grandparents weren't in the parish, and maybe they're not dressed quite the way they would like them to be, or the hair is too long, or the tattoos are too much, or the whatever. The elder son, you know, you have this in the other gospel, the prodigal son. So it's a lesson. I once had a priest. I was giving a seminar to a group of priests, and I used this parable. And he stood up and he said, I think you have the exegesis all wrong. This isn't the right reading of it. The guy is bad for doing this.
Oh, really?
He isn't to be justified. Oh, yeah, there are a lot. You know, in writing this book, I had occasion to go through and really concentrate on the parables. I had never really, I preached on the parables, but I've never in a sustained way read entire books on the parables the way I did in writing this.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wide variety of opinion on the parables and the exegesis and the eisegesis of the parables. You have some people really eisegeting the parables and making them into Marxist class struggle lessons.
Okay.
So it's been a fascinating time. You know, it started with my own homilies on the parables, and then joined to my knowledge of economics, decided to sit down and do it. And one of the benefits of COVID, of COVID tide, as I've come to call it, was that I finally finished the book. This has been a good 10 years in the making, just because I hadn't sat down and finished it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, how much money, do you know off the top of your head, how much did he agree to pay them? They all have the same wage. Was it
the denarius? I think if it's this, I may be confusing this. Does it mention the denarius here?
Yes, I think it's a day's wage.
A day. So what the commentator? Yeah, I see it in the book here. Is what the research says is that what he agreed to give them was a subsistence level. So it was a living wage.
Yeah. Okay.
For all of them. So you know, everybody went home grateful. Just some a little more grateful than others.
Right.
And you know, the other thing about it too is whatever you want to say about the owner of the vineyard, you can't say that he treated them unjustly.
Right.
Justice is treatment in accord with desert. And unless you are a Marxist and believe in the labor theory of value, that the value of a thing depends on the amount of sweat and tears that you put into the thing, and that's a really discredited economic theory. The value of the thing is what people are willing to pay for, what the value is for the person who purchases it. And he was not unjust. What he was merciful.
Yeah.
And it's the way we distort. And yeah. We can distort God in that way.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, it can be an attack really upon God's gracious economy of salvation, in which, as you pointed out, the thief on the cross is welcomed into the thief next to Jesus is welcomed into paradise. Without
I think discipline. You know, the lesson of economics and how it relates to our faith is a lesson of balance. When I looked at the seven deadly sins, and what stood out to me as I was writing this book is that the seven deadly sins were very balanced. It's not money that is condemned in the seven deadly sins. It's greed.
Right.
It's not sex. It's lust.
Right.
It's not success. It's pride. It's not admiration. It's envy.
Yeah.
It's not anger or indignation, but wrath.
Yeah.
It's not leisure, but sloth.
Right.
So it's this sense of balance of what the prime moral motivator is, and the sense of perspective that we have, and the way in which things such as sex or success or admiration can be distorted and made into lust or pride or envy.
No, very good. Very good. Let me ask you about some other aspects of the New Testament dealing with economics here. You often hear it said that the early church, I think it's Acts chapter 4, was a form of primitive communism, and that somehow this is meant to be normative for Christian communities today. What do you make of that earlier? I don't know if Luke's given us an idealized picture, you know, of the early church, or was this a failed experiment? I mean, how do you look upon that? They held everything in common.
Well, I think in moments of crisis or difficulty, we do things that we don't ordinarily do. And the church at that moment was nascent. It was very young, and it was under heavy persecution.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there was this great intimacy, this knowledge among everybody, and they did hold things in common. But that commonality, like a family, is not normative. It wasn't normative for the church. And it wasn't even normative in that context. By normative, I mean obligatory.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they quote Acts 4. By the way, that was Marx's collaborator, Engels. Who said that there was primitive communism in the New Testament.
Yep.
but they never quote the later passage. I think it's Acts 15, where it describes the concrete distribution when Ananias and Sapphira sell their property and pretend to give it to Peter. What they did was they only gave him a portion of it.
Right.
And Peter himself is very direct there. He says, look, when you had the property, was it not your own? And even after you sold it, did it not remain your own? But what you have done now is lied to the Holy Spirit.
Right.
It wasn't that they didn't give the property or only gave a portion of the property. It was that they lied.
Right.
And so right there, it's telling you that Peter is saying explicitly, we're not communists. By communists, I mean, of course, the coercive redistribution of money or the abolition of private property.
What do you say to people who point out that Jesus' advice to the rich young ruler is to go sell what you have, give it to the poor? Is that supposed to be a radical denial of the value of possessions?
Well, if it was a radical denial of the value of possessions, Jesus would not have said, go sell what you have. He would have said, go give everything you have to the poor, or just leave it.
Yeah.
But what he says is sell it. And the very fact that he is first asking the man to be a merchant,
right,
indicates that the man is going to get some money for what he possessed. He's going to liquidate his estate. And to give to the poor what he's received in that implies that he's going to try and get a good price on what he sells, because that's going to be the test of his servanthood. And then Jesus says, give to the poor.
Right.
It doesn't say give it all to the poor. We don't know. Let's say he says give it all to the poor and be my follower, come and follow me. So it's much more intricate, I think, than just this abandonment or this disregard for the value of material things. We should value material things. What we shouldn't do is allow them to interrupt our following, our discipleship of Jesus. Our discipleship will have a cost for each of us. For some, it will be material wealth. For others, it will be the relinquishment of the right to marriage. For others, it will be other things. It'll be humiliation or choosing a career that was not as self-aggrandizing as another.
Right.
And so the cross is there that comes in different shapes and sizes for all of us. It's not just that any of those crosses are intrinsically evil.
In the kind of customary, the social ethos of American Catholicism, clergy seem to have a certain attitude towards, and you correct me on this because you know better
disdain,
than I do.
Disdain, is that the word?
Yeah, they treat the topics of wealth and wealth accumulation or entrepreneurship kind of like kitty litter. You know, you hold it out in front. You don't really want to get too close to it. What is that from? It's not strictly from Scripture. Is it?
No, it's certainly not from Scripture. Well, you know, they are that way until they have a capital campaign.
I didn't want to say that.
I can.
Yes.
I can because I'm retired now, so I can't be sent off to someplace. I think it's a variety of things. Part of it is the lack of economic training at seminary.
Okay.
And part of it is the fact that a lot of our clergy have never had jobs, really, not real big jobs.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point. Thank you. And I love talking to you. I'll see you June 20th to 23rd, right? Acton University?
I look forward to it.
All right, Father. Thanks much.
God bless.
Father Robert Sirico, The Economics of the Parables, delightful book, full of insight.
Weingarts, everything from lawn to snow.
Hi, I'm Dan Weingarts. Our family has been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment for your lawn since 1945. Our experts will help you choose the right product from top brands like Steel. Steel is the perennial gold standard in handheld outdoor power equipment. From legendary chainsaws, dependable trimmers, powerful blowers, and industry-leading construction tools, a Steel is designed for reliability and built for the long haul. That's why so many people use Steel products and recommend them to others. And our expert service technicians and world-class parts inventory will keep your equipment running like new. We've always known that service goes beyond the sale. Visit us to see the full Steel line in Utica, Farmington Hills, Cedar Springs, Clarkston, Ann Arbor, and Livonia, or see all of our specials at Weingarts.com. From our family to yours, thank you for letting us serve you.
Weingarts, Weingarts, everything from long to snow.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
This program underwritten by...
A battle is raging in America for the plight of the unborn. Now is the time to pray and to get involved. Do not miss the new award-winning movie, The Matter of Life. The Matter of Life has been hailed as the best film ever produced concerning the unborn and can be seen for two nights only in a theater near you. Visit FathomEvents.com now to reserve your tickets for May 16th or May 17th. That's FathomEvents.com. FathomEvents.com. It's a matter of life.
Thank you so much. Good being with you. Coming up now, we got the Catholic Answers Live, again, taking your calls. And again, one of the great virtues of Catholic Answers is that they are equipping us to defend the faith at a time in American history, American religious history, that forces Christians who are sincere about their faith to be prepared to give a proper answer for the hope that is within them. So, stay tuned. Catholic Answers Live coming up. I'll be back tomorrow. We've got a few things we want to go over tomorrow. One is this murder up in Buffalo, in which the perpetrator has published a 120-page manuscript. And he's an example of the far right, the atheistic far right, which has been growing.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio, and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.